Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today's show is sponsored by Eden Foods, one of the most trusted names in certified organic clean foods. Listeners of the Organic View Radio Show can receive 20% off any regularly priced items, excluding cases. Simply enter the coupon code ORGVIEW when prompted during checkout. That's ORGVIEW. For more special offers, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com.
As we approach the last quarter of the year, there still has been no progress by EPA to ban or restrict the use of neonicotinoids. Although the United States has always maintained a position of leadership, it remains to be seen as far as any leadership at all when it comes to protecting pollinators, as well as other living beings, from neonicotinoids. On today's show, beekeeper and bee advocate Tom Theobald and I are going to discuss the current situation with neonicotinoids and if there's been any progress. So I'd like to welcome to the show Tom Theobald. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon, June.
Always great to talk to you. I know that you have been working very hard at a national level to try to bring about some changes and raise awareness. But for new people that are tuning in, could you just take a moment and share with our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I've been a beekeeper. This is year number 39, and I'm a small-scale commercial beekeeper. I operate in a limited area. I don't take my bees to California in the winter, and I supply a primarily local market, what I call a community beekeeper.
We've been through a lot, especially with the campaigning to raise awareness about neonicotinoids, working with so many different scientists, bee advocates, beekeepers, what have you. It's now fall of 2014. Has any progress been made?
I'd like to say yes, but I'm afraid that there really hasn't been any progress made. It's largely been an attempt to cover up failures of the past and give the illusion that something is being done when it isn't. There really has been no substantive change, sadly.
Now, what about the state of Colorado, which is where you're from? Has any progress been made there?
The progress is yet to come, but we're working in three areas that I think are significant. We face the same sorts of opposition here in Colorado that we do nationally. What's called the Pesticide Applicators Act comes up for review under the Sunset Law next year, and we have a group here that's been working very hard to propose changes to the Applicators Act, the Applicators Law, that would be more broadly in support of what its objectives are supposed to be. In the past, it's largely been a cover for the industry that it's supposed to oversee, which comes as no surprise, but that's one thing that's in the works, and some very good people are working on that. The city of Boulder took the position just about 3 months ago that they would not use neonicotinoids in the city operations and would encourage homeowners not to use them either. That's a small step. On a more national level, it's gotten a considerable amount of coverage. There's a group that's called Bee Safe Neighborhoods, and they are circulating in their neighborhoods and signing up people to not use pesticides and particularly not to use neonicotinoids, and they're making those changes one neighborhood at a time, and so far they've been very successful. So that's a glimmer of hope.
And I just want to point out that that is really where change begins. When you see that your neighbor is using some sort of chemical that you know is toxic to the bees, to other pollinators, what have you, if you have a talk with your neighbor, most people do have somewhat of a decent relationship with their neighbors, but it's important to educate one another. I know all the different horticultural societies that I'm a member of, I'm constantly educating other people about it. And there are times when I'm talking to someone who has that disposition where they know everything, and when they're hit with the hardcore facts, it makes them stop and listen for a moment. So you just really have to keep pounding the facts and just getting the information out there. And I think what the Be Safe Neighborhood program does is tremendous. And I think every state, every part of the world actually should follow their lead.
Yes, I agree. And they have a website. I don't have the exact citation, but I'm sure people can find it, Be Safe Neighborhoods. And they're very eager to be helpful for other people who want to start up a similar effort.
Since the exciting news was broadcast about the White House calling for a task force to protect pollinators, what progress has been made?
Boy, that's a hard question, and I'm trying to be open-minded here, but what the Obama administration really did was put the burglars in charge of investigating the burglary. The EPA and the EPA and the USDA are supposed to examine their conduct over the last several years and report back to the administration and the American people in 180 days just how badly they failed. Well, that's not going to happen. So I'm afraid we're going to waste 180 more days and nothing's going to be accomplished. They're having meetings and they're trying to justify what they've done or not done, and they're consulting with the stakeholders, you know, all the proper bureaucratic language. But I really don't see anything substantive coming out of this. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that I'm not too critical, but I don't see any progress being made.
I know that the Center for Food Safety does have a petition out there, and they are really asking citizens, and I'm not just talking about citizens in America, but global citizens, to sign the petition to voice their opinion and to put some pressure on the White House to take action. And I know other groups, such as Friends of the Earth, are also working with different areas, schools, what have you, to try to bring about changes as well and raise awareness. So, you know, there is a lot of effort that's being made, but as far as the results, we still have yet to see anything from the White House that's significant.
I would agree. And the more I learn about this issue, the more concerned I become. And that at every step of the way for the last several years, the more I learn, the larger this problem appears to be, and the more concerned I become.
I think it's interesting that in the last term, 4 GMO crops are deregulated, and now all of a sudden, because there's so much pressure because of the global bee losses, and that's basically because of the impact on food security, that they're kind of rethinking what they did in the last term. But, Tom, don't you think it's a little too late at this point? They already let the genie out of the bottle, and especially since this task force really hasn't done anything, what do they hope to do?
I don't know. You know, one of the concerns that we have had with this task force is that there seems to be no interest at all in involving the beekeepers in these discussions as advisors, as commentators, as input. These are the bureaucrats sitting around talking to each other, trying to come up with some report in 180 days. They're not going to the beekeepers. If I were managing this situation, I would find this to be unacceptable.
For people that don't quite understand why it's so important for the commercial beekeepers, the commercial migratory beekeepers, should I say, to participate in this type of a task force to give their input, could you please explain why that is so critical?
we're really talking about a life and death situation here, and I would refer to some recent news about the monarch butterfly. The monarch butterfly, since 1995, has decreased by 90%. During that same period of time, genetically modified and seed-treated corn has increased by the same percentage. Now, that doesn't necessarily tie the genetically modified corn to the decline of the monarch, but it certainly is suspicious. And if you look further, you find that it is indeed directly involved in the decline of the monarch. The honeybee is in the same situation, and the only reason we haven't seen that 90% decline in the honeybee populations is because we have the beekeepers pumping up that population every spring, managing those colonies, doing their best to keep them alive and healthy. And if you remove the beekeepers from that equation, we'll see the same statistics with the honeybee that we're seeing with the monarch butterfly and with many other life forms at the lower end of the food chain that don't have advocates, that are being lost, that are being killed. Some of the richest farmland in the world, the Corn Belt of America, has been sterilized of life with these technologies. And the monarchs and the honeybees are two of the symptoms.
A lot of people are reporting around social media that their one or two hives have plenty of bees. The honey for this year is fantastic. How does that equate to what you're talking about?
It's really hard to judge with the influx of new beekeepers, because most of those new beekeepers have no context in which to understand what they're seeing. They don't know what a healthy population of bees should be. And so you can't really judge by what we're being told by some of the hobbyists. You know, they think that if you get a quart or two of honey at the end of the season, you've had a bumper year, and that is not the consequence of a healthy colony of bees. I don't mean to put these people down. Their intentions are good, and we certainly need their contribution. But I don't think that this hearsay is accurate. I've talked with beekeepers across the country in the last few days, and generally, the prospects for their harvest are poor. 50% perhaps. I talked to a friend of mine who is a member of a beekeeping family that goes all the way back to the 1800s, the late 1800s, and he told me that they're going to have their smallest crop ever.
Tom, if I could ask you a personal question, how are your bees doing?
I may be looking at the end. I've been losing bees faster than I can replace them, and the ones that I have been able to keep alive are certainly not thriving. I may be looking at the end. I may not be able to keep enough bees alive and productive to make the business operate. It's not good.
I'm sorry to hear that, Tom. In regards to your operation, how much longer do you think you can sustain this?
It's always been a labor of love, but it was a business that was profitable and contributed a significant portion of our family income. It's become a losing proposition now, and I'm paying for the privilege of undergoing these risks. And I'm a pretty good beekeeper. I cannot keep these bees alive and healthy.
Now, Tom, I'm just curious. You lived through Vietnam. How long did it take for DDT awareness to reach the public? And how long do you think it'll take for people to understand the ramifications caused by neonicotinoids?
It doesn't look like we've learned a thing. DDT actually culminated prior to Vietnam. The highest year of usage for DDT was 1959, and it was banned, I believe, in 1972. Just prior to Vietnam. But Vietnam is connected in another interesting way. Everybody, I think, has heard of Agent Orange. Many people don't know what it is. Agent Orange was a herbicide composed of two ingredients, 245T and 24D, two herbicides. Now, at this very moment, the EPA is considering a proposal by one of the chemical companies to genetically engineer commodity crops so that they are resistant to 2,4-D. 2,4-D has a very sordid history, and Roundup has created problems and a lot of controversy because these commodity crops were genetically engineered to be resistant to Roundup, which has resulted in a massive overuse of that herbicide. Now they're likely to approve the genetic engineering to accommodate 2,4-D as a herbicide on commodity crops. It doesn't appear that we've learned anything.
How long do you think it'll take before the public really understands what neonicotinoids will do, or can do, should I say?
It's really hard to say, and programs and interviews such as this are toward that end. I think people are beginning to become aware of just how massively they've been exposed to these chemicals, and they're beginning to suspect that the effects are not going to be healthful.
Well, I know that more and more people are starting to talk about the decline of the honeybee, the absence of monarch butterflies in their home gardens, in just in general. And so people are talking more and more. But I guess the bottom line, Tom, is, when do you think we'll see some action by agencies like the EPA?
Unless there is overwhelming public awareness and public pressure, I think my answer to that would be never.
I hate to say it, but until we see action, the question remains, is anyone listening?
The very institutions and agencies that we rely upon to protect our interests, to protect our health, to protect the environment, have become the adversaries, and that's the sad part of this whole thing.
I couldn't agree more. Tom, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate all your input, and it's sad that every time that we're talking about neonicotinoids, there really hasn't been much change.
People need to share interviews like this with their friends who are interested and get the word out, because the only power we have is the power of public opinion. It's clear that the politicians, the regulators, the gatekeepers are not going to do a thing. They haven't done a thing. If they were going to do anything, it should have been done 10 years ago, 20 years ago. They're still dragging their feet and trying to cover up their inadequacies.
Unfortunately, that is very true. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, folks.